The funny thing is, I had that game and I never played it, and I traded it in, wrapping intact.
I love being a troll because you just get to piss so many people off.
What would you rather be inside of? A giant robot or magical girl?
Now we're stuck with you.
I'm pretty sure I'm on a higher plane of existence than you.
I was just about to bring that up. Nintendo, I'm not even going to say anything.
We shall give you a quality show today. I'll be giving you at least 78%.
Launching!
Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to the Anavision podcast. This is episode 311, and I have the whole group with me, almost the whole group.
We had the whole group.
Yeah, we did. At Anavision HQ, I'm J-Ro, joined by Steve.
What is up?
And Amuro.
Yo-ho.
XCOM was here earlier, but he had to leave, so unfortunately we did not, there was too much pre-show banter before we could do the podcast with him. So
there was some technical issues, so
yeah.
If the audio sounds a little bit different, it's just simply because we got Envision HQ got an upgrade and so we had to rework some things and change some things, and so it was a little bit of a learning process.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was one of those things, like, this is the first time this year we've gotten together, but it's also the first time we've gotten together since the pandemic started last year.
Yeah, and I remember January 2020, the last time you guys came over, because we didn't do something in February, and then March was when everything hit. Mm-hmm. And so this has been a very long time coming, and I'm happy to see all of you guys again.
We've all made it through healthy, thankfully.
A few extra pounds for a couple of us.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're in quarantine, and then like, I myself have gotten a desk job recently, so that doesn't help.
Yeah. I was losing weight a little bit there for a while because I got so used to the free donuts and all that stuff that we would get at work that I would just eat like, oh, everybody else is here eating healthy. I'll have 4 to 6 or so. But then it's like, oh, that kind of stops and I'm not going out to lunches as much.
See, here's the problem with that. When the quarantine first started, I definitely would say the snack situation at work, the lack of snack situation at home, I should say, definitely made me kind of start thinking, oh, I'm going to start losing weight. And I would say I did. And then I discovered DoorDash.
Yeah.
And curse, I was like, you. DoorDash.
I can have Chick-fil-A delivered to me every day. And so,
I was like, what is this? Bad Daddy's Burger Bar?
Yeah, I've had that. It's pretty good.
I'm going to try that. Yeah. And then suddenly, you know, you're sitting at home and you're just having a random person bring you a 14-ounce double-decker
burger.
Yeah, hamburger. And you're just like, I think I'm going to eat this whole thing once a day for a whole week.
Well, see, here's the other thing, too. Is like, this speaks to my mentality, too, right? Like, when I'm at a restaurant, I'm a little more reserved. Like, I'm not going to sit there and tell the waitress, you know, give me cheese curds and cheese sticks and onion whatever rings. And then I also want a huge taco plate with chips and salsa. Like, I'm going to be more reserved. But when I'm at home, I'm like, fuck it, dude. I can just order whatever I want for the appetizer. Yeah. And I can just put it in the fridge. But then inevitably, you're sitting there like, these are good.
Yeah.
You're like, but I am already eating this.
And nobody's looking at me to judge my choices.
Exactly. They don't know. There could be 2-3 people here.
And then you think, it's like, I am spending, like, you know, like, I'm spending money on the food, but then I have to also pay, like, tip.
Yeah.
So I should order more food.
Exactly. Exactly.
So really get my money's worth.
Yeah, I eventually I've stopped doing the Grubhub and the DoorDash because I was being nice to tip like 25 early on during the pandemic. But then, like, you know, you do that even twice a week, it really adds up. You're paying like $200 for food that probably costs like half that.
Yeah.
Probably less than half that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I started doing that a lot less too. I think I've gotten down to once a week for me. Like, I'll pick, like, here's Wednesday or something, and I'll be like, you know, I'll order something nice for lunch, get something nice delivered, and then for, like, dinner, I'll eat, like, a salad. So at least I'm trying to balance that off a little bit, but Before it was like, I'll eat a huge lunch and then go get a pizza for dinner or something, you know. Mm-hmm. Now I've definitely, you know, you feel it. So tangent aside, it's definitely good to be back with people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
Which say we're all vaccinated.
Yeah.
That's why we're doing this. We're doing this responsibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We waited pretty much the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was there's a thing in Florida, you know, like Florida, they basically canceled COVID a long time ago. But there was a promoter for a concert where he would sell the tickets to vaccinated people for like $18 or something. And then for non-vaccinated, like $700-something.
Yeah. I mean, you've got, this is very anime related, but you know, you've got some country or some states that are, basically bribing people into getting the vaccine with an opportunity to get some money, but also sometimes guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have an that's uncle in Ohio, and he was talking about a lottery that they have.
I really think they should have a lottery in every state, and even maybe a national one.
Yeah.
Just if you're vaccinated, you get to win the lottery. You get a $1 million or whatever. I mean, it's just, in my opinion, responsible. I get the people that, you know, are not doing it for medical conditions, or they're pregnant and they're really not sure. Like, I get those people, but like, there's a lot of like healthy people out there. Like, I don't want to mention names, but I have a friend who doesn't listen to this podcast, so no worries. But they were really concerned about the vaccine, and it was just it was one of those things where I just like I get concerned to an extent. But after millions of people have had it now,
that's my biggest argument is that you have people saying that this vaccine is untested, but we've already given it to millions of people. Mm-hmm. What better test could there possibly be? Like, and then you know, there was that news about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine giving people like blood clots, and they halted it for a little bit, you know, out of like an abundance of caution. So I'm like, you have nothing to worry about. Like, if they start noticing things, they will stop giving it out.
And that caution, it was just like 6 out of...
Actually, the number did go up to, I think, about 11 or 12.
They found.
But still, like 12 out of like over like 7 million that had gotten the shot.
Yeah, that's a huge margin of error. And it's the kind of thing where like those people, at that point, it's more likely that they just happen to also get blood clots in addition to getting the vaccine.
Right.
Like, they were probably going to get them anyway. So, you know, it's hard to say that this one thing caused the other.
And the last thing we'll go on tangent on saying for this is that, and even if the vaccine goes terribly wrong, we all turn into mutated people.
Yeah.
Why not turn into mutated people with us? You'll be the only ones not crazy mutated people like in the Last Man on Earth movie. You know?
One of us.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. So on episode 311, we have a variety of topics, and these were actually suggested to us by Anime Blue.
A couple of them were.
Yeah. So these are anime related, of course, Anime Blue. So what is the first one that we have, Steve, for discussion?
We had a couple game ones first.
Oh, we do? There's game stuff?
Yes.
I'm not even looking at the doc.
Yeah, so I spent all that time making the doc. So I guess we'll go ahead and jump into one of the topics, and then we'll get to the game stuff.
Sure.
So one of the topics he actually suggested to us was Shonen Through the Years, kind of like a comparison of sorts of looking at all the different kind of major shonen titles that we've watched specifically, because obviously, you know, so we cover everything, and kind of just compare them how they were, how they are. It might be a little bit of a divergent on what he specifically asked. You know, Anime Blue is a longtime listener. He likes a lot of focus on animation and Sakuga stuff, which I definitely find fascinating, and I cannot talk anything about. But with that said, though, I when I kind of think about this, I think back to at least the first show I think of is Dragon Ball Z, because that's I don't know about you two, but for me that was the show.
Yeah, that and anything on Toonami.
Mm-hmm.
was like the big start for us.
Yeah, but for specifically shonen-wise, that was the one show that, you know, me and my brother watched, and we kind of, you know, that was our thing. You know, I think I've even said this story before. Me and my brother got into a fight. We were on the ground rolling, shoving, pushing, and not a good situation. We had this old, we call it a grandmother's clock because it came from our grandmother's, but a grandmother's clock where it just started dinging, and we looked up and it was like, oh shit, it's 5 o'clock. We immediately got up, ran into the family room, turned on Dragon Ball Z, and was like, ah, yes. And then we were like, what were we fighting about?
I thought you were going to say you got into a fight because of Dragon Ball.
I didn't even know what it was anymore. And
Dragon Ball was the thing that made you stop fighting. That's good.
Yeah.
Because, like, I remember, like, it's not, I wouldn't say it's really shonen, but, like, Gundam Wing was something that I was watching around the same time as, like, Dragon Ball and stuff like that as a kid. And me and my brother would fight over, like, which characters we were in the show, right? So I'm like, I'm Hero Yui, and he's like, I'm Duo, right? And or that kind of thing. Like, that's what we would get into arguments and stuff over. But yeah, definitely Dragon Ball is the, I think a lot of anime fans, at least in the U.S., like, their entryway into the whole genre.
Yeah. I remember I had first moved down here to North Carolina in 2000, and I lived in the second floor of an apartment, and I had two friends that lived in the apartment below me, and they were anime fans, and so they turned me on to Dragon Ball Z, and we would watch it together upstairs at, like, 5 o'clock and stuff, and then, you know, all that. Just from there, everything took off with me as far as anime fandom.
Yeah. I think when you look back a lot of the old shonen series, I maybe it's just the old fogey in me, I really do have really fond memory of them. I'm not going to necessarily sit there and say, yeah, they were definitely better than the new stuff. But I have, like, especially when I go back to shows like Ranma One Half, when I guess it kind of borderline shonen and shoujo, actually.
It could go both ways.
Yeah. But Ranma One Half, Yu Yu Hakusho was another huge one. I really, like, that to me was a big show. I own, like, the whole set, and I love it.
I recently rewatched the whole thing.
It still holds up, doesn't it?
It's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah.
And English dub, too, by the way.
That's the thing, too. Both Ranma, Dragon Ball, all three, actually. All three series, Dragon Ball Z, Ranma One Half, and Yu Yu Hakusho, superior in English.
Yeah.
Even if we were to throw in, like, Inuyasha, which is a little bit, that's kind of like the next generation, it's still, like, some of these early dubs, especially that one, so good.
Yeah. And that's at a time where most people groaned at the quality of English dubs in most anime. Whereas now you look at it, it's more well put together and a generally solid production. But even back then with, like, you know, Sean Schimmel voicing Goku, like, it's just, it was so great.
Yeah.
Certainly much better than the one in Japanese.
It's not an old woman. No offense to Masako Nozawa. She's great. But to me, like, revisiting Yu Yu Hakusho was one thing where I realized, like, wait a second, Keiko is that... That's Laura Bailey. Wow. Who, yeah, like, you know, nowadays she's best known for, like, her video game roles and stuff like that, but she's also, like, an anime actress or voice actor for a long time, and that was one where I was like, oh, damn, that's her, and she sounds so young.
That's really good to hear that Yu Yu Hakusho holds up, because I don't think the same can be said for Dragon Ball Z.
Dragon Ball Z had the filler problem. I think, I want to say, like, I think the filler problem, while it got better with some later series or longer running series, I would say, it was pretty bad with Dragon Ball Z. Because, like, back then, we were stupid kids, right? The screaming for 2 or 3 episodes while charging up a big orb ball to throw at somebody seemed cool. And it also really very much helped because these weren't weekly shows anymore. I mean, these were shows that had aired 2 or 3 years, 4 years prior.
We were getting them.
Yeah, we were getting like 2 or 3 episodes a day.
Yeah.
And even if it was just one episode a day, like, it's still one episode a day. So, like, he could scream for two or three episodes in a row.
You wouldn't even care.
We wouldn't even care. But think, imagine in Japan, right? Like, you're getting this one episode a week. I would be infuriated. It's like, oh.
Still run into that problem today. Like, you know, nowadays, right?
Yeah.
But, and I think, like, specifically that filler issue, that's something that I think we'll talk about in another topic that we're discussing, and, you know, like, when it comes on how to adapt an anime. But like, it's almost kind of weird to think about it now that that was like old school shonen anime when we were young, and then like the quote-unquote new era of shonen anime started like when we were just getting into it, so like Naruto, Bleach, and One Piece.
Right. The golden era, I think it was called.
Yeah, the Holy Trinity.
And those are now the old Shonen Jump shows. granted, you know, it's like one could say that One Piece is still the king of shonen anime, but, you know, like, those were contemporaries, and like, we were like there at the beginning, and and that's why for me, like, Naruto was an experience, because I got to see it from the beginning all the way through to the end.
I started on like episode 70.
Well, I like, that was one where a friend of mine, I was in high school, and someone, I wouldn't say a friend, but like someone that I knew, like, at school, was like, hey, here's a CD with like, you know, 70 episodes CDR. On it. Yeah.
was it XCOM? Because that's who gave me my 70.
That was the same. Yeah.
It was somebody else, but I think someone that XCOM gave
him. it probably originated from him.
Say it was the same school, so yeah. Someone named Andrew, I think. But anyway, never mind. It was one of those things where, like, put it on, watched it, and like, binged the hell out of that. And then from there, it was like,
weekly, yeah,
this is a thing now, right? And you know, like, 20 years later, now we're reading and watching stories about Naruto's son.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do feel like that's a great way to kind of jump into the next generation, kind of like what I would put in. It's kind of like the Trinity, where we start sitting in there and we start seeing, you know, Naruto, we want One Piece, Bleach, Hunter x Hunter even. I know Hunter x Hunter kind of had a revival in 2010-ish. But it still was originally in there, and it still had that weekly kind of, split it into seasons, but it still had a pretty, I think, I want to say almost 60 or 70 episodes. So it was a pretty decently long show.
Wait, what was 60 or 70?
The entire original Hunter.
Okay,
yeah. So before it got delayed and ended and then rebooted. But yeah, I still, like, when you come back to that, I looking at Bleach, I know there's some hardcore Bleach fans that are going to be pissed off at me. The two of you that are. Bleach is the one that's kind of like the Dragon Ball Z of that generation, I think, where I really loved it at the time it aired, but I felt like it does not hold up. And I feel like this is where some of the filler stuff definitely was major effective, because, like, you know, while Dragon, I think we got older, first off. So we got more aware of this filler stuff. I think it was also handled pretty poorly. And I think Naruto and One Piece handled it better, right?
I would argue that Naruto also had its filler problems, because I, like, that was one thing where I got to the, even not having read the manga, right? Because, like, a lot of times people complain about filler because they read the manga first and then they watch the anime and they're like, hey, this wasn't in the anime. In the manga, sorry. And that's why they don't like the filler. But, like, for me, it was, okay, so I'm watching Naruto, binging it, get to the Sasuke versus Naruto fight, and he leaves the village and he has to go after him. And then suddenly Naruto is just going on random adventures, like, you know, trying to find Sasuke, but also has nothing to do with anything. And not having read the original source, I was like, I don't care. Like, it lost my interest.
That was, like, from, if I remember, 135 was the last episode of that, like, main storyline. And from 135, 136 to 220, random ass adventures.
That's the thing, just, is it went full filler up until it became Naruto Shippuden.
Yeah.
And that's when it rejoined the manga storyline.
The only argument I would have, the reason why I feel like it still does it better, is that that was a time skip, right? Mm-hmm. So we had a very natural endpoint to one story to move into the next phase of the story. Yeah. And while we shouldn't really not include the fact that there were filler arc stuff before that.
Yeah.
But that was like the main, like, huge filler, right? But again, Bleach sometimes would input filler in like mid fight. Like, it was literally mid fight when they split to a new filler arc. Mm-hmm. That's stuff that seems unacceptable to me and poor planning, in my opinion. I just don't feel like it was handled very well. And I think in general, it really lost my interest in the show. And I think that's a lot of the reason why I think that show definitely ended before the manga ended, right? Because like it ended and didn't they come back and do like an ending or something like that?
For what? For Bleach?
For Bleach, yeah.
I don't think it's ever gotten an official.
It never got an official? Okay.
The manga ended after the anime was canceled and supposedly Bleach is coming back. But something I do kind of want to talk about, like with regards to like those three big shonen shows, is that they're very much shows written by people who grew up reading,
idolizing Akira Toriyama.
Exactly, Dragon Ball. Like yeah. that was, and you can kind of tell that they were like following that formula, but like with mm-hmm. their twist on it,
right?
And you could say that like nowadays, everything's still, I mean, like, you can still draw the line back to Dragon Ball, but, like, now, like, the big shonen anime and manga are more influenced by Naruto, Bleach, One Piece. Mm-hmm. You know, like I want to say that the one that stands out to me the most is Black Clover.
Uh-huh.
Which is literally just a pastiche of different shonen things. Like, it's very much Naruto and like, even Fairy Tail and stuff, mm-hmm. you know. You can look at it and be like, yeah, this guy just took a lot of elements from different shonen things and made it, basically was like, okay, this is the winning recipe for a shonen manga.
Yeah. I do find it somewhat interesting that when you come back and you look at the generations, it's definitely very much basically a 10-year generation. Because If Ranma one half, Yu Yu Hakusho, and Dragon Ball Z, that all happened like the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And while One Piece and Naruto technically started in 99, there really wasn't a new wave of major shonen titles until 2010. So, like, yeah, you can probably throw in some middle shows like some big middle shows like Full Metal Alchemist. Mm-hmm. You could throw in something like Death Note, even. You could throw that in there. That are all in the like the 2000 era. But like big shonen epics, like those definitely took a backseat to those series. And those kind of why I feel like 2010 is when you really try to think of like, well, what would be the next ones you talk about? That's why we have to kind of almost skip to Black Clover, which kind of ends up in the 2010s. And then you got shows like My Hero Academia and you throw Attack on Titan in there. Mm-hmm.
Demon Slayer,
yeah. So it is very interesting to kind of look back, and I feel like you could almost highlight generations by every 10 years.
Well, and like, I'm sorry if this is kind of jumping around a lot, but the thought occurred to me that like we're never going to get another One Piece. Like there's never going to be another series that in my mind that mm-hmm. runs for 20 years concurrently.
Right.
And you know, nonstop, and is just a long running shonen story. Like Naruto was the closest thing, but even that ended mm-hmm. and then moved on to like, you know, a new story, which was Boruto.
That is actually a good, I guess, almost a sideways conversation, mm-hmm. sideways topic to have. Do we feel like the epics, the decade-long-running, 20, 30-year-long-running series is over? Because when you look back at it, a lot of major shonen series, you take something, My Hero Academia, announcing it's going to supposedly end.
Yeah, it's already in its final arc.
Yeah.
Demon Slayer, which was a recent big hit, already ended.
My Attack on Titan, over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
These shows are no longer saying, well, let's be around for 20 years. Like, because Naruto was around for that long. You know, Bleach lasted how many years? Like, that was pretty long running before it ended.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was like over 300 episodes or so.
No, I'm talking about the manga itself in general. I feel like that's kind of interesting to kind of think about because, like, if we're going to do this retrospective, like, it's interesting to consider, like, maybe, you know, when we all are continuing to do this podcast in 20 years, like, I'm sure we are. Maybe we look back and think about whether or not shonen series are looking to be shorter, and that could be because people's attention spans are shorter.
Back in my day.
Yeah. Back in the 90s.
I
think it's like it's difficult. Like everybody always brings up like attention spans of people these days, mm-hmm. and that it's difficult to build a new series that will keep a person's interest with the level of One Piece. Like, I think that's just incredibly mm-hmm. difficult to do because I think there's exhaustion either from the audience that is, you know, we're talking about this a lot more because of the internet and the availability to tweet out or make a post or something. And there's a lot of criticisms about stuff and we look at things in a very more critical sense that I think makes us more critiqueful of, you know, looking back at Dragon Ball and all those fillery stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And even Naruto also, and we're probably getting to that point now with My Hero a little bit.
Yeah, I think this most recent arc of My Hero sums it up best. Well, you know, last episode, I talked about how I was not feeling this arc.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to clarify the recent arc in the anime.
Anime, yes. Anime.
Because,
I'm not reading the manga.
Yeah. Let's leave that discussion for another time. but I understand and like again this topic does kind of overlap with the adaptation thing because like My Hero is I prefer the way that My Hero is being done where you get short bursts, like you get like a season or two at a time,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, with a break in between, as opposed to like the Black Clover approach where they just did 200 straight episodes.
Right.
You know, and...
Now, did they ever have an issue where, oh, we're running close to the manga?
I think they did.
Let's stretch this out. Let's put a filler.
Because Black Clover was not a very old manga when the anime started.
Hmm.
And you could really tell that, like, one, the pacing was just really bad mm-hmm. in Black Clover. And then I don't know if this was... Because I didn't read the manga, but, like, I didn't know if it was the case that the characters were like this in the manga, too. But, like, mm-hmm. everyone just came off as, like, catchphrase, you know, screaming machines, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And everything just felt like it was padded. And to me, that was... I mean, like, Black Clover is a show that has its really high moments...
Mm-hmm.
But you have to sit through a lot of crap to get to it.
Yeah.
Do you think, just kind of going into two shows, you think Boruto is the future for shonen, long-running shonen series? The fact that the reason they can make Boruto weekly is because there's no source. Well, they can... Well, I say no, you say well.
So, like, I say well because, like, Boruto's a unique case because it's a monthly manga, and... They are adapting material from the manga, but they were also adapting material from novels and other source material that was not just the manga. Like, and they even brought in Kishimoto to write some original stories for the anime. So, like, ironically, some of the arcs in the anime that people were like, oh, this is filler, were actually written by Kishimoto himself. I think it's interesting because, like, Boruto is something where you get a very different experience whether you're watching the manga or, like, reading the manga or watching the anime.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really say which one's the main, like, you know, with Naruto, you're like, the manga is the main one, and then the anime is the adaptation. Like, with Boruto, they both started around the same time, and they were just doing different things. So, that, I mean, that is a good question, is like, if that's going to be the model going forward.
And it's also very unique with them working on novel stuff, too, because all of these previous anime we've been talking about only ever from a manga. So it, in that sense, it kind of makes Boruto seem like the definitive experience for Boruto, because that's where all of his stories are being adapted into, where if you were just a manga reader, you're missing out on some interesting storylines, and if you were only reading novels, vice versa.
Yeah.
One other thing I kind of want to hit on with these with this topic is since it was recommended by Anime Blue, animation, right? We mentioned that Yu Hakusho still holds up. But let's be real here. Animation-wise, like, especially when it comes to things like action scenes, fight scenes, like, how well does it hold up comparatively? And I think it's one of those things where we can go back and we can look at some of the top tier Naruto fights. Let's talk about early Naruto fights. Let's talk about
Gaara, Rock Lee.
Gaara, Rock Lee, or the original Sasuke versus Naruto at the Origin Pond River place. I don't remember what it's called.
Right. It's like some
I think it was Origin something. It had Origin
Waterfall.
And we can look at that, and I can tell you, if you were to compare that to, let's just go to the Boruto fight where Boruto. Where Naruto and Sasuke, adult Naruto and Sasuke fought the god guy, right? Like, there is a level of difference there, right?
Sure. I mean, like, those are kind of good comparisons to make, because those episodes were mostly animated by one person each. Like, and you can kind of tell when, like, there's a big Sakuga episode where, like, okay, this the lead animator was the one that, you know, really left his stamp on this episode. And like I said, you could say that for the Sasuke versus Naruto fight, and you could probably say it for the Momoshiki fight in Boruto. That to me is more like just a showcase of that person's skill. Not so much as like, oh, anime's gotten better since then. And like, you know, to that point, right, like talking about like big Sakuga moments and action and stuff, I think that long running anime doesn't afford more of those moments, right? Because like you have such a long, you know, it's a nonstop production that you're gonna get episodes that are outsourced to different animation companies, right?
And it's very obvious when we watch it. We look at that and we go, budget cuts.
Yeah.
they're saving for that fight that we know is going to happen. Like, so,
See, I would even make that argument, because even if we were to push towards, you know, one thing you mentioned was that you prefer, you know, the whole let's split it up into, you know, different seasons per year versus ongoing. But excuse me. But if you look at the most recent episode, because we, you know, we watched some anime when we were here together. Eating our food, and we watched My Hero Academia, and like, it was one of those things where, as I said, I'm not the one to talk about animation. I'm the guy that doesn't click as well with him. Like, don't get me wrong, when I see something amazing, I see something amazing,
right?
But a lot of times when I see something stupid, it doesn't click in my head. Hey, this is stupid here. And I think it mostly has to do when I rewatch something.
Yeah,
because when I was rewatching, because Jiro was behind two episodes, so I was originally gonna, like, I'm gonna just watch both of these in a row, so I know they're both the Meteora fight. So I thought that I would just do that, but I caved. I watched one of the episodes. So we rewatched one of the last week's episode today, and I was just looking at it, and I was just like, holy crap, that character is standing still. And then it just panned over to another character standing still, and that was like 20-30 seconds of the episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and like, people,
and this is a series that they should have much better time with production.
Yeah, and people will point this out, but at least everybody was on model.
true
Like, people will point this out and be like, they're not moving, it's a slideshow, whatever. I'm like, Well, yes, because it's still a weekly production. Like, a lot of the times they could be running right up to the minute. So
yeah,
you're going to have to save time wherever you can. But then that leads up to, like, in that same episode, there was Deku's Black Whip manifesting for the first time. And that was a really animation-heavy and, yeah, you know, intense scene, right? So, like, you talk about cuts in anime. And again, like, I'm sorry, Anime Blue. Like, I am not a Sakuga expert, but, like, this is just my very basic knowledge speaking, right? So, like in anime, you have cuts, right? So, like, it's a scene up until it switches to another scene, right? That is a cut. And then, like, you have people that are responsible for the key animation in that cut, and then you have, like, the in-betweeners that go in and fill that out. Right. So a lot of the Sakuga fandom is being like, okay, so this cut was drawn by this person and so on. So a lot of the times you'll have, like, a relatively conservative episode, which is mostly just still images, maybe the lips are flapping,
right?
And most of the time, like, we don't really notice it because, like, we're reading subtitles,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So
the story.
So you, like, it's like you said on the rewatch, when you weren't paying so much attention to the subtitles because you already knew what was being said and what happened, you're noticing the animation, you're like, oh no, they're not moving as much as I thought they were. That's actually super common. You know, it's more like the anime movies, and then, like, episodes that have a one lead just working on it, and, like, you know, like, this is my episode, that you see a lot of experimental stuff and, like, movement and things like that. So, I mean, that's just the nature of anime.
Yeah, I agree, but at the same time, I still feel like we definitely can put the newer shonen series higher in the animation quality,
yeah,
simply because, I mean, obviously you have the fact that things are in 4K, whatever, you know,
yeah,
digital, everything is much more digital now than it was then, but there's still the fact that CGI is being used way more effectively now than it was even 10 years ago.
About like the animation process, like, again, like the Sakuga fans on Twitter and stuff, they'll post, like, the keyframes that the animators are drawing, and a lot of the time you'll see it, they're not in color, because, like, the color is the big benefit to digital anime nowadays is that the coloring is done in post, right? So, like, the line drawings for the animation are still hand drawn, and then they go and add the color digitally. Back in the day,
they didn't have any net.
No, yeah, everything was cell animation, right? So, like, it was actually a physical, you know, like, a physical picture drawing that had to be filmed, you know. So, like, you can imagine the amount of, like, cost saving that they would have and how intensive it was. But that's what I'm saying, is that, like, when a single episode, you can have multiple people working on it, right? So, like, you have different people in charge of different cuts, and the issue with long running shows is that you're gonna outsource them, right? So, like I was saying with, like, Black Clover, like, there were episodes where none of the characters looked right, like, they were short and stubby, and you know, that's a whole nother step above, like, okay, the anime, like, they're not moving as much.
Yeah,
so that's my main point.
Okay, that makes sense.
Kind of seems like the inflexibility of, like, television contracts. Like, I don't know the exact, I've never read into the details of how that works out with Japanese anime, but, like, as far as, like, what your time slot is and how many episodes you get, like, Black Clover, you know, judging by everything that you just said, sounds like a situation where they really shouldn't have just kept going all the time. They could have probably taken the time to have a season break, and then we end in the spring and we come back in the fall, or even a year, whatever, just to make sure that the animation is at least up to par. Although I don't think that would have stopped anything. Ultimately, they would have outsourced those episodes,
yeah,
because we know, we've read the stories all the time. It's an industry that doesn't really pay that well.
No.
And then
you got to remember, it's like, So Black Clover is being animated, like, you know, the main studio is, like, Pierrot or something like that, right? And then, but they also have multiple shows in a season, yeah, you know? So of course things are going to get out of sorts. It's all about scheduling. But man, I feel like the conversation went to a different topic.
well, we can kind of jump this into the next topic.
Yeah.
Which again is one that was suggested by Anime Blue, which was kind of looking at what our ideal adaptation is. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I think we've hit on a few things where we definitely prefer the yearly, you know, get a core or two in, mm-hmm. and then take a break so they have time to properly plan these out, let the manga give some breathing room and animate things a little bit better, and not be forced to be put into this huge schedule every week. So I definitely think that's like obviously one thing we can kind of push in, mm-hmm. that we all agree on. One thing I think is very important for adaptations is for them to be original. Mm. I know that's going to sound a little bit controversial. I think close adaptations aren't bad. Obviously, I think they're amazing. But the closer the adaptation, the less likelihood I want to read it. Because if I know, hey...
So you're saying like you've already watched the anime, you're less likely to go back and read the source?
Exactly.
Right.
Okay. And I used to be, admittingly, I used to be much more like, I don't care if I've, you know, read this, I'm going to go watch it, right? And I used to be much more on that whole, definitely follow the source as close as possible, you know, line to line, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I definitely felt like over the years, it's more interesting when... Not only does it give them a chance to give us, you know, let us read the manga and experience something a little bit different and kind of being able to compare the two, it also gives the animators a chance to, let's just say, fix some of the mistakes that they might have made. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest ones was a few years ago we were talking about how Attack on Titan, how one of the arcs was in the manga was really talky, and they went in and with the author's blessing actually did some changes in the structure. Mm-hmm. I can't necessarily tell you what they were, but I do because it was 7 years ago, but it was in a way to make the anime better. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great way to approach that. I mean, obviously if you're a fan of the source material, you're going to probably get a little bit butthurt. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, clench your cheeks,
yeah.
and take it.
clench your cheeks. I was gonna say, you know, like I think normally it's grit your teeth.
Yeah. Well, they were butthurt, so they gotta clench your cheeks.
And make sure the shit doesn't come out. Yeah, I think the that sounds like really good. Like the idea of a collaborative, mm-hmm. effort between the original author, mm-hmm. yes. and the animation studio to make like. To not just adapt a story, but also to make improvements where that's necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the obvious issue is that the mangaka may have firm beliefs in their, mm-hmm. in what they've written, or there may be anime studios that they have full creative control of the anime content, and then they just don't care. Yeah. And they're either going to do the story as it's told, or they're going to do their own thing, and... I think that's what happens most of the time.
But, yes, true. Hmm. And I think that's a good point to make as well. Like, I don't want to necessarily make an argument that anime originals are better. Mm-hmm. It's more of, I think, as you said, the Attack on Titan was very much a collaborative thing.
Yeah.
And even if it's not necessarily collaborative with the author, as long as there's the spirit of we want to make this better, not that we don't care and we just want to push out 24 episodes and never come back to this again. That's where things are better.
You know? Yeah. The good thing about your original anime original idea is we know this is the product that we're getting from whoever's doing screenplay or writing like this. We don't have to worry about people coming up to us saying, oh, the manga, they did this, and oh, the light novel, they did this. You know what the product is you're getting, and you don't have to look at other source material or have arguments with other people that have read the source material and have conversations that can in some ways like sour your view of the product that you watched and that we watched, which at least for you and I, Steve, it's mostly just the anime. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of manga
we read anymore. Yeah. Yeah. It's, I, I definitely think there is certainly that risk of souring to where you can easily go in and then you read the comic and you're like, or the manga.
Yeah. I could have done this better.
Yeah, this could have been done better. But at the same time, there is, like, again, I think I come back to thinking of things like comic book movies, and this is why I mentioned comic. There is obviously, when you technically look at, especially the MCU and the DCEU, whatever's left of it, smoking corpse, there's definitely a lot of differences. And you can be a comic book guy,
yeah,
and you can enjoy both and know that you're coming in, you're getting the Infinity War, but it's not the same as the comic book that was written in the, I think, the early 90s, right? So you can get that new experience, and it feels very fresh and different. I mean, even take something like Watchmen, for instance. Yeah. Like, there were octopuses, right? There was huge, giant alien octopuses in the original.
Yeah.
Like, there were robots, too. There were, like a giant robot shooting laser things. Like, there was a lot of weird shit that was taken out to make the movie adaptation more clearer and better.
Yeah. And that's also interesting because, like, with Marvel and all that stuff, like the comic books, you're appealing to a specific fan base, whereas these movies, they're major blockbusters, they're here to make millions and millions and millions of dollars, so they have to appeal to a very wide audience. And so that's why a lot of those story cuts happen, and I'm familiar with people bitching about Watchmen, the original movie, versus the novels.
Yeah,
or novel.
I think the interesting, like, it's not manga and anime, but like what Marvel does interesting for their adaptations is that most of the time they don't follow the comic story at all. It's like Steve was saying, it's like Age of Ultron is nothing like the Age of Ultron comic, right? So most of the time they just take what works from that, like, first draft. You know, basically the comic was the first draft of the story, and then like the movie is like the edited down version of it. You know, like Civil War was a grander thing in the comics. Like, in the movie, it was still like they focused, laser focused in on the conflict between Captain America and Iron Man. And I think that's a really smart approach to how they do it. Like, whereas like with DC, you have things like Batman v Superman, which they essentially took like three comic books stories that were like completely unrelated to one another and then just jammed them together because they were aesthetically cool. Like, you know, the death of Superman, the Dark Knight Returns, and, you know, whatever else was in there.
Right.
You know, like, those could have all been their own movies. And instead they were like, yeah, just throw it in there. We're going to blow our wad.
I put that more on Zack Snyder. And I think that comes back to the having people who really care, authors and, you know, people who've worked on stuff really care about it, coming in and having a stronger creative control. Like, I know you hear a lot of the stories of, you know, oh, well, Geoff Johns was on set and he was fighting, and but in the end, especially with the early adaptation, Zack Snyder was king, right?
Yeah.
What he said went. And then when you had the Joss Whedon stuff come in, when he came in, you know, it was definitely Joss Whedon was king, right? So, and I don't think that there was, I think having more control with some of the authors, I don't know, we're kind of getting very tangential with comic books here, but even back when going to the manga, you know, having them have control over this, I think that's where we get better, or at least even not necessarily control, but people who are genuine fans of the material and understand more than just let's just duplicate it. I mean, even if we go to Star Wars and look at, you know, Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni and see what they've done with The Mandalorian, and it's not because there's some sort of material as much as they're just genuine fans steering the ship in that direction. And I think that's the same with anime should happen. Is there needs to be people there more than just, I'm a director, I do good anime. There needs to be someone who's really knows the material well enough to adapt it to keep the soul alive of the material. And that's where I think the best adaptations can come from.
And I mean, like, going back to anime, because you have different types of anime adaptations, right? Because, like, manga, when we think about anime being adapted, we think of it mostly coming from manga, right? But yeah, there's also light novel adaptations. It's evolved
so much. Yeah, even video games.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. The even smartphone games are getting anime.
Pachinko games.
Yeah, Rio Rainbow Gate.
Yeah, Princess Cyber Connect or whatever.
just some real trash.
Just garbage. But even, like, even manga has different adaptation styles, right? So, sure. You know, I think more to the spirit of Anime Blue's original suggestion, like, I think that you can adapt things you can adapt the same thing in different ways. Like, just look at Fullmetal Alchemist versus Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, one deviated greatly from the original source material. But then the other thing is, like, so how much of the anime directors and animators, like, touch should be in the adaptation is another thing to think about too. Cause, like, a lot of the time with anime, you just have, you know, let's say the creative team is not very strong. The manga is a storyboard for the anime. It's just essentially just scene for scene adapted from the manga. Mm-hmm. Whereas then, like, you have maybe Jujutsu Kaisen and Demon Slayer come to mind, where, like, they have really strong animation moments. And, like, you know, Demon Slayer had, like, really cool things that they did with, you know, 3D animation, where, like, the environments were 3D, but you had a 2D character running through them, and just right. really awesome things. And I think that's why those two shows were super successful. Like, they adapted the story, but I feel like they also improved on the manga. Whereas, like, you know, a show that I'm really enjoying right now, Eden Zero, like, Mashima's style is so simple and clean that, like, mm-hmm. it's easy enough to put it on screen, and then you don't really need to do too much to it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, you're just adapting the manga right to screen.
Right.
You know, and then you have moments where, like, the action comes through, and then, like, you can really feel the animator's touch. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's another way to kind of think about it. And then, like, with anime that are based off light novels, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
a lot of the time, you know, like, we kind of joke on those because, like, you know, like, a light novel is, a lot of light novels are trash.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, when it comes to an adaptation, you don't have that visual medium that you're adapting it from, right? So, like, mm-hmm. you don't even have the manga to use as a storyboard for the anime adaptation. So, like, what actually gets put into the anime suddenly becomes a question, right? Like, Danmachi was one that I was bringing up a lot when it was airing, because, you know, that one, actually read the books and then watched the anime as it was mm-hmm. being adapted, and stuff was left out. And for a lot of people that read the books, they were super pissed about it. But I'm sitting here going, mm-hmm. like, it's an adaptation. You cannot be 100% accurate to mm-hmm. the original things. Things have to be cut for time. And, like, you have to judge the adaptation on its own merits. Like, mm-hmm. if someone who's never read the source material can watch it and enjoy it and get the full story,
yeah.
it's successful. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, just because they left out some material that, like, fleshed out a side character or whatever, that doesn't make it a bad adaptation. But, you know, everyone's going to have their own tastes when yeah. it comes to that.
Yeah, and it's difficult because you're a fan of the light novel.
Mm-hmm.
You love all of this, and you love anime too. So when you see it gets an anime, oh, it's getting an anime, and this studio is working on it. And then you wait for this moment that you like to happen, and then it doesn't. you're instantly let down.
Yeah.
But I do think mm-hmm. I agree with you that more people have to be understanding of the time constraints and episode Absolutely. Counts and all that stuff.
And it's almost like, you know, the other thing too, like, coming from let's say you read the source material and then you're watching the anime, if it sticks 100, like, super 100% close to the, like, manga, for example, you're not really getting anything out of watching the anime besides it's in color
and voice acting.
And it's voice acted and it has some music. You know, otherwise you're watching and, you know, you're seeing the same images and the same story, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that some variation on the original is a good thing for, you know, the people that read the source material. And going to the light novel thing, like, you know, Danmachi, again, was one that I read the books after having mm-hmm. seen the anime. And to me, it was like a revelation because, like, there was a lot of extra material in the novels. I was like, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, I get a deeper story in the novel because I enjoyed the anime. So, you know, you have to think about it that way too. Like, there's going to be people that are going to watch the show and then read the source material. And, you know, sometimes there's going to be some give and take there.
Yeah.
You know, one other thing I would add for my ideal anime adaptation, I want to remove, and I know this will never happen, this is just me, my ideals. I want to remove the stigma that the anime is there to sell more books. I feel like far too often that becomes a huge issue because it's like, oh, we didn't see it boost sales for this.
And so it's never going to get another season. So
it's never going to get another season. And I don't think a good anime needs to sell more books. I know, you know, especially when we talk about how we prefer, you know, that there be a anime, you know, there be the differences in between the material to make it more worth watch or more buying it, buying the actual books and things. I get the feeling oftentimes the adaptations tend to be so close that no one wants to buy the books. And as you said, I feel like that's where it ends in. That's why they didn't sell any new books, is because, you know, why would we, you know, buy more books? I just watched it, the guy walking around slicing people up, way cooler than watching it, reading it on a page or in a book.
Yeah, because the idea there would be, you, if you're talking about like selling books, you would do original story content with the same characters in the same world, and then at the end of the season, people know there's a manga or a novel here, and then they go read that, and they're getting original stories, and they're, it's like adding on to that experience instead of what you're talking about, which is, oh, we're just reading the same thing. I bought the book, but I've already watched this anime. Why would I buy another book?
Exactly. That's why it needs to be removed.
Yeah. It's like the ideal anime adaptation. It's like, it's very dependent on the people that are working on it and the source content. It's a very tricky thing to like figure out, like the process and sort of like who takes the lead and what source material takes precedent and all that stuff. So,
well, here's a thought exercise. What was a really good adaptation of something that, like, you, let's say you read the original and it had a really good adaptation that you enjoyed. So, like, while you guys think about that, one that stands out to me, where admittedly I watched the anime first and read the novelization later, or the original novel later, the Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya.
Oh, okay.
That was one where, like, you know, it was an earlier KyoAni work, but they made it in such a way that it felt like it was set in a real setting. Like, it felt like it was set in the real world. And then you had these, like, bright and vibrant characters and, you know, doing crazy stuff and whatnot. Like, I think that was a fantastic adaptation. Because you go and read the book and, you know, it's a first-person narrated story, right? So, like, you're in Kyon's head and he's describing things. And sometimes you don't know whether he's actually saying something out loud or, you know, narrating, but sometimes people will, you know, like, and they kind of like carried those things over to the anime, but like the anime was a visual medium, right? So like you get a sense of the school and everything that's in. I thought that was a fantastic like adaptation. Like the disappearance of Haruhi movie to this day is one of my favorite anime things, just period. And like that to me is my ideal anime adaptation.
You have one? There aren't that many source materials that I've read before watching the anime.
I think I come back into some old classic ones that I think really handled certain things well. Like, for instance, Welcome to the NHK. That's one that I'm sure a lot of listeners are like, the fuck?
Yeah.
that's one where the source material was actually, I believe, more upbeat. And it was, and when they actually adapted it, they kind of made it a little more darker and depressing. I believe that is, it's either that way or the other way around. One of those two, they kind of flip-flopped it. And I felt like because again, it's been well over a decade, and I own both the manga and the anime, and I just remember how they're both short. I think the anime is 24 episodes, but the manga's short. It's only like 8 volumes. It's just interesting to see how they took something and made it a little bit lighter and brighter, or again, I don't remember which one. All I know is I don't remember which one I watched or read first, but either way, I watched it and it was darker, and then I read it and it was lighter, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. It was darker first and lighter the second. And I think that was kind of like an interesting concept to me, because it was like, oh, hey, you know, clearly the directors had a different thought on how certain things should be.
Yeah.
And I think another good to that, and the reason why that was on my mind was because of the new series that just aired, or that just came out. I only watched the first couple episodes, but Sweet Tooth on Netflix. It's based on a comic book series that is very dark, like really dark, that deals with hybrid kids that get like sexually abused, mutilated. Not a very happy-go-lucky place. But I was watching some of the like the behind-the-scenes interview stuff, and they said they had their goal for the show was to make it more upbeat. Not necessarily always happy-go-lucky, but right. like, you know, take away a lot of those really dark elements. Like even like in the comic book, the characters were drawn to be creepy, right? Mm-hmm. But in the show, Sweet Tooth is like, he's a cute kid with antlers, right? And deer ears. So I kind of like that. I do like how at least Welcome to the NHK did kind of flip that script and kind of change things up. That's the one that I think comes to my mind without any, like, if I was at my house, I would be like looking at my mangas and my DVDs, and I'd be like, let's see, what do I look at? And I could probably have a better answer for you. I would probably at least throw in, I would throw in Full Metal Alchemist. I do feel like while Brotherhood was amazing, I think oftentimes we look back at just the original and go, you know, half of it was anime original, who cares, but that half of it was good. I very much like the original series. I definitely think Brotherhood ultimately is better,
right?
But considering, you know, the differences between the adaptation that they had, especially at the time, it was pretty much just a we have no more content,
right?
But I do feel like that gives the original series something very much worth watching on its own before you read the manga or watch the sequel reboot. I think something like if I were to flip the scripts on something, like if you were to look at the reboots of, say, I know this is more of a less of a manga, more of a reboot example, but if you were to look at Hunter x Hunter when it originally aired in the early and late 90s, early 2000s, versus Hunter x Hunter from, you know, 2010 era, there really wasn't much of a difference. There was some slight differences. They changed up some of the earlier stuff because it was already adapted, but like, it feels pretty much like if you're watching one, you're watching a lot of the other one, right? You're at least probably getting at least a good 50 episodes of what is almost identical content. So I don't feel like that handled itself well versus what Full Metal Alchemist did.
Could you think of one?
The only one that came to mind, and this is a very odd one, is like Castlevania.
Okay.
Like the animated series that's on Netflix right now.
That's actually a good one.
And it's I feel like it's very easy to do what they did with Castlevania, because you think of all the different games we've had, Symphony of the Night and all the Super NES games. They were all like different stories with different Belmonts, and it's a platform that's easy enough to build your own world and your own story and your own character, like Trevor Belmont and Sifa and of course Alucard. I thought that was like a really good adaptation from feeling like an experience of playing the video games, but also very fresh from the perspective of watching an animated piece of content from Castlevania. I think that one stands out to me.
That's a good one to bring up, because like it's Castle, and they clearly took Castlevania 3 as the inspiration,
mm-hmm.
and then kind of made their own thing with it, right? Yeah. And you could definitely tell, like, I mean, Castlevania 3 was an NES game, so any story was really, like, in the manual, you know? Yeah. And you know, like, everything else was just 8-bit primitive sprites and stuff like that, right? So mm-hmm. the story, the basic story is you're a Belmont, and you got this group of people with you, and you go to the castle and you kill Dracula, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like, with the Netflix Castlevania, they made their own world and story and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one that I was thinking about while Steve was talking is Monogatari. That is an adaptation that I feel
strikingly
like
different.
And the thing with it is that the source material is, it's one of those things where it's not so much like, it's not your typical novel, like where, you know, in your typical novel, you'll have like a lot of flowery language of like, okay, so he walked into the thing and they describe where he is, yeah, and how, you know, how he was feeling at the time. Like Monogatari is conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes he'll go 80 pages talking about nothing. Right. And so like, how do you adapt that? Right. So yeah. Monogatari is a series that you really feel the touch of the director and the animators, and you know, like the storyboarders, like mm-hmm. everything, like the people that are making the anime, you feel their touch on it.
Right.
And you know, like going and then reading the manga that's being currently serialized, and it's drawn by Oh Great, is another interesting experience because like he's adapting it in his own way. Mm-hmm. Right. So like it's
which the, is, oh great.
Yeah. Ogure Ito. Yeah. Tenjo Tenge and
Air Gear.
So like it's very visually stunning, right? But like again, you don't have the source material to use as a storyboard, right? So you have to come up with your own way to adapt it. And I think those are visually the most interesting kind of adaptations where it's like mm-hmm. you've read the source material, now you're actually watching the adaptation for something that's not just the story and the mm-hmm. dialogue. You're watching it for the actual art of how they adapt it.
Yeah.
True. But then you get stuff like 86 where they just draw it out so slowly.
I'm the 86 is something that I'm holding off on watching right now because I do want to read the novel to be able to compare it to the adaptation. But there are something, even just in what little I did watch and read, a lot of the exposition that's in the book that is like in dossiers and just like, you know, conversation stuff, mm-hmm. they did do some really smart things where like in one of the early episodes, Lena is talking to a class like and she's like giving a lecture or whatever. A lot of that exposition was turned into that lecture where in the book it was just exposition.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, 86 is doing its own cool things here and there.
Okay.
All right. If that is it for our discussion on anime adaptations, we have a couple game stories, including... recently, it was announced that God of War Ragnarok will not be coming out in 2021 and is now scheduled for 22.
Yeah. To me, the delay is not really the real story here. It's they also announced it's going to be coming to PS4, which is very awesome for those of us who fail to get a PS5.
Mm.
And hey, everyone at this table who has a PS5, raise your hand.
And has an amazing friend who will definitely help him find one, right? I mean, don't get me wrong. I keep trying, but I'm very... here's the thing. My phone is terrible at getting, I don't understand. Like, I have, like, notifications for, like, Newegg Shuffle, and then I'll get a text. I'll be like, oh, great. And I'll go, and it's like, it's over. I'm like, fuck you, text. That is interesting, and it tells you, you know, it's the unfortunate reality right now that PS5 shortages, like, for them to take a big budget game like God of War and to say, yeah, it's also coming out on PS4. Now, I am concerned, to say the least, about what they're going to be doing to make it run on PS4, especially since it's being developed for PS5. Maybe it's not. Maybe there's more behind the scenes we don't really know.
Yeah.
But Yeah, that's interesting, and I'm really hoping to have a PS5 yeah. to play my play it on. But like, for instance, the upcoming Ratchet and Clank game, like clearly they either didn't have the time or they couldn't downscale that to work on mm-hmm. on PS4, because I know they would have if they could.
Ratchet and Clank is like, I mean, if you believe the hype, right, like from yeah. from their trailers and
yeah.
conferences and stuff, like it was made to
showcase.
Well, showcase, but also like take advantage of the SSD in that's in the PS5 versus, you know, the regular hard drive that's in the PS4, yeah. where like you can instantaneously load entire planet levels, mm-hmm. right, going from one area to another. And so I feel like maybe if that's true, they wouldn't be able to port it to PS4. But,
yeah.
You know, like Horizon's another one that we know Forbidden West is going to be on PS4 and PS5. And from what they've said, the lead development is the PS4. So it's going to made to be run on PS4, but then it's going to take advantage of all the PS5 mm-hmm. upgrades, right? So like,
yeah.
you know, it'll be running at 4K and it'll have a performance mode. And so think of how Miles Morales did it, right? Where it had a PS4 and a PS5 version. Mm-hmm. God of War, I don't know. Again, like the question is, what is the lead development?
Part of my concern though is still that if there was a lead development, just like you know, Miles Morales and stuff, this is going to be developed. If it was developed for PS4, it probably was for PS4 Pro, right? And those of us who still have the old stock,
oh man,
PlayStation 4s, who suffered things like dips and ditters when they tried to play
Ghost of Tsushima.
I get concerned, you know, because I know, like, I'm not going to go buy a PS4 Pro because I can't mm-hmm. get a PS5.
Hey, Steve, you know what runs really well on a PS5?
Yeah, but my point is, like, I'm definitely, like, because I loved God of War. It was one of my favorite games of the year it came out. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited for it. So I definitely, you know, I have no intentions on getting it on PS4, even if it is coming out, and even if... Mm-hmm. Heaven forbid I don't have a PS5 by then.
I mean, they would probably do the upgrade to a PS5. Like, if you, let's say the worst case scenario happens and you still have a PS4, or you don't have a PS5, you could get it and then upgrade maybe to the PS5 version.
Yeah, I do think the thing about that is, like, you think about the difference with Sony and Microsoft as far as their approach to the next generation, mm-hmm. where PlayStation 5, it really has felt like the PS5 is going to be our new flagship system. We're going to release all the games on it, and we're eventually going to get away from PS4. Whereas Microsoft felt very differently about the transition between console generations, and that could have an effect potentially on game development.
Yeah, I'm really not. See, I'm really not sure about that philosophy either, because I am like, I really want. Like, because I could go out and buy Miles Morales on PS4. I've not played it yet, and I could go buy it on PS4, and I really do want to play it, but I don't want to because I don't want to have any, you know, weird interactions when I try to play it on PS5 because it's, I mean, Xbox, at least, they've released their games, and it's Xbox. Mm. You know, that's it. You can go get it if you still have the original Xbox One, well, or the Xbox
One X
or Series S. Whatever, you know, whatever console you have, you can put it in and play it on.
Uh-huh.
So, and that's intentional design. And so for them, I would have been more comfortable. I mean, for me, there are games coming out. Like, I am excited about Far Cry, and I have the Xbox One, and, or the Xbox Series X, sorry. Mm. I have that console, so I will be getting it on there, unless somehow I manage to also get graphics card, a new fancy one that maybe I'll get on PC, but we'll have to wait and see on that. So either way, I'm curious to definitely see the performances, and I definitely would love it. So I think especially with things like when they showcased Cyberpunk, they showed it on like some PS4 Pro, but like I wanted to see how it ran on PS4 or even like mm-hmm. Xbox One, you know, the original Xbox One. Like I'm curious to see on that than the Xbox Series or Xbox One X or whatever was the next one on.
Talk about a game that fell from grace. Like, holy shit. Like, people don't even care about what the next update is.
Yeah.
Like, they... It's like you... they have to release new content. Mm-hmm. And even then, you'll have people just, like, I think that game is just...
It's done for.
Yeah, it really is. Like, I just think there's not much saving you can do for a game that had that horrible of press in its first month.
It's not even that it was a bad game. It was just...
Yeah.
It should have waited. It should have been delayed a year.
Yeah.
Flat out, one year.
They sold everybody a bill of goods, and they didn't follow up on it.
With regards to God of War, and, like, you know, even talking about Cyberpunk, like, you ask yourself, why didn't they just cancel the PS4, you know, the last generation versions and release it on PS5 and Xbox? Because they didn't want to miss it on the install base, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's 100 million PS4s and you know, a nebulous yeah. amount of Xbox Ones because yeah, they stopped yeah. reporting numbers.
And, like, the thing is, even, like, with the whole trade-in stuff and the returns, like, not that many people returned it, so they yeah. still made a ton of money, even though we're sitting here saying, like, dead game, LOL, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why Sony is doing God of War on PS4, because they, like, you know, maybe if we were in a world where they could produce more PS5s than they could sell, it would be an exclusive, because then God of War PS5 would sell more PS5s. Yeah,
be the killer app.
Yeah. Yeah, but at this point, they are already selling every PS5 they make, so they have a hard limit as to how many God of Wars they can sell. Mm-hmm. So it just makes sense to them make it available on PS4, because then you have 100 million plus 7 million that you can sell.
One quick fun fact here. A lot of times we like to talk about things like shortages. The reason why there's not that many PS5 is they can't, you know, there's a shortage of silicon. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's actually not 100% the fact, because they are actually producing a lot of consoles. The problem is the supply versus now versus when the PS4 came out is drastically different. The demand.
Yeah.
It's drastically different. There's way mm-hmm. more people now, because, like, when the PS4 came out, yeah, us sitting in this room, we aren't a good, you know, sample mm-hmm. of interested people. Mm-hmm. There were still a lot of people just satisfied with their PS3 or their Xbox 360s. Like, they were satisfied with those consoles. And it got to a point where now it's like, oh, hey, new console, new greatness, and now everyone wants one. There's more people wanting them. And because yeah. of that, it's there is, like, I don't want to make it all sound like, oh, silicon shortage. We just need more. That's mm-hmm. the problem. It's not just the fact there is a little bit of a shortage. Don't get me wrong. It is affecting some industries. Yeah. But it's more of the demand than anything, than the, yeah. like a lack of parts.
Which, ironically, like, the fact that you can't get it is making it more popular.
Yeah.
So it's like it's one of those things where, like, if something is available, people are less likely to buy it because they can buy it whenever they want, right? Mm-hmm. So when a PS5 becomes available, it's like, I have to buy it now because I may not be able to later. Mm. And it's that FOMO that increases the demand even further. So it's like it's a self-replicating cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And kind of tying into our final game story, there's also, you know, some bad news from bad press from Nintendo, which isn't anything new, but, you know, they're about to release their Skyward Sword, right? That's a game I think all of us at the table are interested in getting,
but because none of us played it originally.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, none of us played it originally. We know it's not necessarily the greatest Star Wars Zelda game, but,
well, I don't know that because I didn't play it.
But either way, the interesting thing is, so they announced that there's this cool amiibo, and it looks pretty dope, but it's like $20 first off, and you have to have the amiibo to use fast travel. And you tie that on the fact that there's definitely not going to be enough of those amiibos around, because mm-hmm. that's kind of the cool yeah, thing about amiibos is they're rare and limited. Yeah, I mean, it's $20, but it's plastic. Let's be real here.
Mm-hmm. It's a physical thing.
This thing cost Nintendo $2 to make.
Yeah.
You know, you tie in all the extra marketing and blah, 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 blah. But it's still, they're making bank on this thing. And the fact that such a simple quality of life thing, you know, fast travel will be taken out of it if you don't have a plastic amiibo. And plus, it's not very clear, like, if you need the amiibo every time you want to fast travel. So, you know, the whole crutch of being, you know, a portable console you can take anywhere, you got to also tote around your stupid little amiibo everywhere. Like, how's that going to work?
I think it's probably being blown out of proportion. Like, it could be that something that you unlock early if you have the amiibo.
No, that's not. Nintendo specifically said
that you can only do it with the amiibo.
Amiibo is how you use fast travel. Ugh.
That's silly.
And now it brings the question of, do you eventually just give it to everyone because they're bitching? And then it's like, well, I bought the $20 amiibo.
Yeah.
It's like, and again, as I said, there's not going to be enough of those amiibos to go around. That's period. It's not even like a, even if you just wanted it for fast travel, just collectible wise, there's not going to be enough of them around. Because that's just the way, as I said, that's
because,
the way they operate.
Because nowadays, it's scalpers who get everything first, bots, and then, you know, we get a $40 amiibo.
To be fair, though, at least there's more stores open, so you could probably go to more physical stores and find these things.
Yeah.
Which is one of the big reasons bots blew up as much as they did. But even with that said, you know, it is what it is. It's I think Nintendo is never is it, Nintendo is like, who cares? Because we're gonna bitch about this for a month, and we're gonna probably bitch about it when the game actually comes out. But you know, in 6 months, who cares? Nintendo's Nintendo, man.
Yeah.
Nintendo Thank doesn't you. Have to do the apology Twitter videos like other developers do.
Yeah.
Because they don't care enough to do.
They still sell their games at full price 10 years after they come out.
I mean. Like, how old is Breath of the Wild? And it's still full price unless you get it for $10 less on Amazon, which just is Amazon taking their cut.
Yeah.
Not them reducing the cost of the game.
Nintendo says, we do not devalue our games.
Yeah. All right. And with that, thus concludes episode 311 of the Anavision podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Anavision.org is the website that you can go to check out all things Anavision. We are on Spotify and other places where you can download and listen to podcasts. So do check us out on those platforms if you have not already. Coming up in the future, I believe we'll have a spring 2021 wrap up at some point. I believe we're on episode like 9s and 10s of most shows. And then we'll be doing the summer 2021 anime preview. And at least for us here at Anavision HQ, we'll be getting back in the flow more of like occasionally meeting here and recording the show, and that'll be great.
Also, E3 is coming up.
Oh yeah, that's next week.
E3, because everyone's backing out.
Yeah. Does that start? It's kind of weird. Like, it kind of spans like a much longer time than usual.
I think it's like the 11th. It's next weekend, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, but like, I know Square and Microsoft are having conferences on the same day. Those are kind of the major ones I'm looking forward to. I mean, I don't really care about Xbox, but
but with Bethesda now, yeah.
Like, you can imagine those are the ones that are going to have like big announcements and stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bethesda was always a big conference on its own.
Yeah.
And now it's Microsoft.
I think the game that people are looking forward to is Starfield from them. We may hear something on there. And there's rumors about a Final Fantasy Demon's Soul style game maybe being announced at the Square Enix show, so that's exciting. Then Nintendo is also going to have their own thing after E3, so like there's going to be a lot to talk about.
Isn't Sony also supposed to be doing something else?
I think so, but like, again, who knows?
Yeah, so I know they're not doing E3 anymore.
Yeah.
All right, so with that, thank you for listening. For Steve and Amro, I'm Jero. We will see you next time on the Anavision Podcast. Believe it. Can't hold her now. Focus and don't hesitate.
臆病風に吹かれながら燃え馳せるだけの日々。